Chapter 11, A Miracle Performed. As the Ekka jogged along the rough, dusty village road, taking Dr. Brown from Delhi to Palwal, she was oblivious to the discomfort which had made such a lasting impression during previous trips. This time, her mind kept spinning out new ideas to lengthen and strengthen the possibilities of the proposed medical school. The results of the conference had been most gratifying. The decisions reached had been precedent-shattering. Was not this the first time that such a large number of women missionaries had come from such a diversity of denominational backgrounds to pool their efforts and resources in a united project? The resolutions had been printed. Now it would be her task to see that they were circulated to all mission agencies in India, as well as to many in Britain and the United States. She had to prepare a list of equipment and supplies which would be needed for starting the school and running the residence for the girls. 6 dozen sheets, pillowcases, 12 blankets, tablecloths, napkins, enamel dishes, dinner set and tea set for 12, curtains, bed covers. Oh, what a mountain of supplies will be needed for the schoolwork. Pens, pencils, lots of paper and notebooks. Let's not forget the need of good English reading books, along with standard textbooks, to start building up a library. It would be good also to have a small harmonium and hymn books. As these thoughts passed through her mind, the immensity of the task which they were undertaking kept confronting her. Sometimes it feels almost too big an undertaking, but let us remember it is God's work, not ours. And the need gets more and more pressing. We must gird on our armor and go forward in God's name to train helpers for his work. She reassured herself many times with these thoughts. Nevertheless, she could not help reflecting on the earlier workers who had attempted similar programs and had given up after a time. God give us the strength and grace to persevere in all difficulties until we reach the goal he has set for us, was her constant prayer as she looked toward the future. Dr. Brown compared the training program of the early pioneers with the one now proposed. Their training had been an informed student-doctor relationship with emphasis on practical training in the hospital. They had no relationship to the various medical schools or to the state university. There was no formal government-approved curriculum or state examination. In both cases, there had been male instructors, and in Dr. Humphrey's classes, there were even men students. In each class, the teaching staff had been too limited. Dr. Humphrey managed his class alone, while Dr. Swain had an assistant who was one of Dr. Humphrey's trainees. Ultimately, the two doctors relinquished their part in the medical education program. This new school would have to have a minimum of 4 qualified doctors. The curriculum must be in accord with that of the state medical school, and the students must be prepared for the university professional examinations. The academic subjects would be given priority, with the students being worked in toward training as they were academically prepared for it. Admission would be restricted to girls, and the teaching and administrative staff would be entirely female. Run along these lines, Dr. Brown felt that the new endeavor was more assured of success. She had already sent a letter to the syndicate of Lahore University requesting details regarding standards for affiliation. It would be interesting to see the response. Her remaining 3 months at Palwal were fraught with anticipation and anxiety. She hoped her society would permit her to move back to Ludhiana in March to begin preparation for the opening of the school. Meanwhile, she watched daily for the camel cart which brought the incoming mail, hoping and praying for affirmative responses to the appeals which had gone out across the land and over the world. She was particularly enlightened and encouraged by an exchange of correspondence with Isabella Thoburn, a pioneer in non-medical collegiate education for girls in the whole of India. Miss Thoburn shared her experiences in breaking down the barriers of tradition regarding the education of girls. So little value was placed upon the daughter in the average family that one man told Miss Thoburn it would be much better if she educated his cow than his daughter. The cow was the more valuable of the two. With the society's permission, Miss Brown returned to Ludhiana in March, this time to stay. It was a real homecoming as she was greeted affectionately by old friends. Emily Pogson was particularly delighted and was overflowing with bits of information. The committee of the SFE, the Society for Female Education, has agreed to renting the disused school building to serve as the medical school classroom building. They will rent it for £70 per year, and if we survive the first 10 years, then the building will be ours. Isn't this a wonderful offer? We have also been offered a house by Mr. Wiley, our good Christian neighbor. Oh, Edie, it is all working out so well. Who can doubt that God is leading in the whole undertaking? Edith Brown heartily agreed with her friend, especially when a letter arrived from England informing her that the request from the Provisional Committee for her services as principal of the new school had been granted by her home committee. Dr. A. C. Angus, secretary of the Baptist Missionary Society in London, communicated the resolution of that society. Resolved that we give up Miss Brown, M.D., for this medical work. The gift to include her medical training and education, her outfit and passage money, and the surgical instruments granted to her, that we set her free from her work at Polwall after the end of March for the initial business connected with the scheme, except during the months of May, June, and July, when she is expected to take charge of Miss Farr's medical work in Bewanee, and that we continue her salary until the end of 1894. If the scheme succeeds, we then cease to pay Miss Brown's salary, but will take a grant of £50 per annum, or more if practicable, towards the support of the medical school. But if the scheme falls through, we regard Miss Brown as still our agent and expect her to return to work for our society as the committee may direct. Now Edith Brown felt she was on firm ground and could proceed with her plans for the next few months. She was also cheered by the gesture from her society in offering financial support, which she interpreted as an act of confidence in the plan. The mail was bringing in other encouraging reports, promises of financial support from the United Presbyterian Church of Scotland and the Ladies' Association of the Church of Scotland. One letter brought a real exclamation of joy. In it was a gift of £50, the first cash donation toward the project. Here again, Miss Brown felt strongly the sense of divine leading. For this initial gift came from Mrs. Edward Robinson of the Tyndale Baptist Church, Bristol. This was the same woman who had opened the door for Edith Brown to have financial support for her medical education in London. Is not this a heavenly validation of all that has developed in the intervening years, she thought. Look here, Emily, our very first scholarship, she cried to Emily Pogson as she waved a letter in the air. It is from my good friends, the Misses Culverwell in Dublin, and they have been most generous. Let us pray that many others will respond in the same way. Other friends in England remembered and responded to the appeal. The Red Hill YWCA sent £10 to buy a cow. The students in the London School of Medicine for Women, who surely had a deep sympathy for this new movement, sent shipments of library books and chemical apparatus. Dr. Foreman of the American Presbyterian Mission made a contribution of a considerable amount of school equipment. The first meeting of the Provisional Committee was held at the end of March, 1894, to review the results of the appeal which had been sent out. It also sketched the preliminary arrangements for teaching and housing the students. A second meeting of the Provisional Committee, the last week of April, decided that the school would be opened, God willing, in October of that same year. It would begin on a small scale with a course for nurses and one for compounders and a dispensary assistant. It was proposed that in the spring of 1895, The full 4-year medical course would be started, but this would be dependent upon further funds and promises of support. They felt that God would open the way for their needs to be supplied and decided to make it a special matter of united prayer on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday mornings. They looked for a miracle and went forward with their plans in full anticipation of its being granted. Knowing that she would have to spend the 3 summer months in Bewanee, Dr. Brown concentrated on outlining the courses of study and drawing up the prospectus for the medical school so that it could be printed and circulated in the early part of the year. The first prospectus, a single sheet of paper, simple in design, but daring in vision and large in faith. In the quietness of her room, Edith Brown penned the lines which spoke of her dream becoming reality. Prospectus of the North India School of Medicine for Christian Women. The above school is to be opened in Ludhiana in October 1894 to meet the pressing necessity for providing a thorough medical training under fully qualified Christian medical women for those Christian girls and women who wish to prepare themselves for medical mission work. The first session will open with a course of instruction for compounders and midwives. In the second session, summer 1895, it is intended to begin a 4-year course of training for medical assistants, standard of civil hospital assistants. As soon as a sufficiently large staff of qualified medical women can be attached to the school and a sufficient inpatient hospital practice be secured to fulfill the requirements of one of the examining universities, a 5-year course of instruction will be begun, and students who wish to do so will be able to take the university examinations and qualify as assistant surgeons or LMS. This was indeed a large dream, considering that only 2 staff members, Dr. Brown and Dr. Balfour, were then available, and it was determined that a minimum of 4 would be necessary to open the school. At this juncture, several communications from the University of Lahore were received in reply to her query regarding standards for affiliation. On March 9, 1894, the syndicate indicated that it would not be prepared to recognize an institution provided with only 4 women professors and 30 beds, but if the institution could show its ability to cope with the task of giving instruction equal to that given in the Government Medical College, the syndicate would be prepared to consider its affiliation. It also asked guidance from the medical faculty of the university regarding the number of beds, teachers, and general hospital arrangements considered indispensable for reaching the required standard. The proceedings of the medical faculty, as recorded on May 19, 1894, set the sights and established the goals toward which this, as yet unborn, medical school would have to fight tenaciously over the next few years. The faculty, having read the papers relative to the affiliation of a school of medicine for women proposed to be established by women medical missionaries, is of the opinion that the following conditions should be insisted upon as necessary qualifications for affiliation. A, that the hospital should provide accommodation for 100 patients in the general ward, exclusive of midwifery or other special wards, and that it should have a distinct staff of physicians and surgeons. B, that the teaching staff of the school should consist of at least 8 professors, no one of whom should teach more than 1 major subject. C, that the school should be provided with properly equipped anatomical rooms, chemical and pathological laboratories, and that adequate arrangements be made for the teaching of practical botany. The faculty further recommends that before finally deciding to recognize any such school of medicine, the syndicate should appoint a deputation to inspect the arrangements made for teaching. In order to help the school develop and grow, auxiliary committees were formed. The one in London took much initiative to send out appeals for financial aid and for staff members. Some of the members of the committee had themselves served many years in India, and knew the pressing needs which confronted the infant institution. The committee in Edinburgh received strong support from Professor W. S. Greenfield, M.D., who drew up a statement regarding the aims and purposes of the school and circulated it throughout the British Isles. Very shortly afterward, additional auxiliary committees were formed in Ireland and the United States of America. Through these committees, leaders in the field of medical education in various parts of the world associated themselves with the drive to achieve the goals for the school. Christians in all walks of life sent their contributions and joined their prayers for the working out of the miracle at Ludhiana. On her return from Bhiwani, Dr. Brown was confronted by the task of taking over the school building, which had stood vacant for some time, and remodeling it to fit the needs of the School of Medicine. Part of it had to be used as living space for the students. This involved the construction of bathroom facilities, kitchen, dining room, and living room, as well as sleeping cubicles. With the very limited funds at her disposal, it presented a considerable challenge. The girls' rooms were divided into cubicles by the simple expedient of making dividing screens from unbleached calico curtains with turkey red borders. She proudly showed the final result to Emily Pogson. "Just look how attractive it is. But best of all, these will last for years and years and wash very well." There were other practical needs to be considered. A conveyance was needed to carry up to 12 girls between the school and the Charlotte Hospital, which was in the center of the town. It was not desirable for young single girls to walk alone through the bazaar area. Also, if the girls walked in the hot season and wet season, they would arrive at the hospital in a dilapidated state. For this conveyance, 2 bullocks would be needed, but these could be used also to draw water from the well to irrigate the garden and to fill the Dobie's washerman washing tank. 2 cows would be needed to provide safe milk for the members of the establishment. There must also be a vegetable garden to supply the kitchen needs, as well as a place for growing medical plants, i.e. specimens for use in the classrooms. In turn, each need was met, and in confidence, Dr. Brown went on to open the school. The last week of October 1894 saw Dr. Edith Brown, together with the matron, Miss Chill, and 3 girls established in Laukoti, the Red House. This was the beginning of the North India School of Medicine for Christian women. In the first week of November 1894, 3 more girls arrived, and the school was launched into the academic world with 6 girls, all enrolled for the course in nursing. Within a month, 1 more student was added. However, this was just the beginning. Dr. Brown was determined that the hospital assistance course should be started as quickly as possible. 5 students indicated their interest in coming for the course in January 1895, and 6 more had applied for the spring term. By January, the alterations to the school building would be completed, and work would be well underway with the rooms being constructed for practical anatomy and a chemical laboratory. All this was good, but there still was a deficiency on the staff. A minimum of 4 doctors would be needed for the medical course. As yet, there were still only the 2 in the middle of November. United prayer continued, and the miracle continued to be anticipated. On November 26, 1894, a united meeting of the Ludhiana and Farrukhabad missions of the United American Presbyterian Board passed a resolution favoring support of the new medical school at Ludhiana. They recommended that their board make an annual grant of £100 to the school, plus £100 toward initial expenses. Further, the Farrukhabad mission agreed that 2 women doctors just arriving in India could join the staff of the school until the following August. Each could teach 1 subject in English while learning the language. By December, Dr. M. Maud Allen and Dr. Bertha Templeton Caldwell had taken up their positions, and the staff was now at the required strength of 4. God had provided, The miracle had been performed, and the hospital assistance course was initiated in January 1895.